Lee Wolf Bloom remembers a time in her life when she was clinically depressed, and as much as her friends wanted to help her, they didn't know how.
So many people had told me, if you would just pray, you'd be healed. And yet I still felt miserable. I still had a real deep clinical depression. And my eating disorder, most of it was because of the depression of just, I didn't want to eat. I didn't want to take care of myself. And so I felt great shame and embarrassment that I couldn't get out of it. And then I was like, well, God must not love me because I'm not healed. So then why should I live?
This is Family Life Today. Our host is Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. When we have friends or family members who are in a hard place like Lee Bloom was in, do we know how to help? And if we find ourselves in that place, how can we be brave? We'll talk more about that today. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. You remember a book that came out when we were back in school?
Yes.
You just remember one?
I do.
Just one. I'm thinking of
read it in the first grade.
No, you did not read this one in the first grade. This is a book that I think won the Pulitzer Prize. It was written by a president, but it was it captured the imagination of a nation. It was a book, Profiles
in Courage, by JFK.
Yeah, John F. Kennedy wrote a book where he told us stories of courageous people. And I think we were a nation then, and maybe a nation today, that needs to hear stories of courageous people, because as you've quoted, who is it that said when one person is courageous, the spines of others stiffen? Who said that?
Billy Graham.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And JFK made the statement. This won't be exactly as he said it in the book, Profiles of Courage, but he made the statement that some men, some women, sail with the wind until the events of the day propel them into the center of the storm. And it's back to the idea that the book is written about great men and women who displayed profiles of being courageous. We have a guest with us today, Lee Wolf Bloom, who has written a book called Brave is the New Beautiful.
And you're a, you think of yourself as a brave person? I mean, that's
we're now, kind come of on.
That's
spot.
A longer question.
Yeah. Come on, be,
I can
be truthful.
That,
you've had to confront your fears.
Yes. So,
and to embrace bravery, right?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't have written the book. I always feel like everything that I try and anything I speak about or write about is always something that I feel like God's teaching me. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I feel like I don't have any authority over it. Mm-hmm. So would I say I'm brave? I would say yes. Now I can say I'm brave. I'm almost 46, so it's taken me this long. But the bravest thing that I have to do every day is be the person that God made me to be. And I say that because, as I mentioned before, I grew up in a verbally abusive home and live in a culture now that we all live in where there's this idea that I'm supposed to be one way, right? There's this idea that the Lee that I'm supposed to be is all these voices of my past, all these voices of the world. And so for me, the bravest thing that I can do is not listen to that and step into who God has made me to be. And that's hard for me because I very easily can get stuck in shame, in a deep, deep pit of shame. Mm-hmm. But the more I reach into scripture and the more I believe God and what he says, the more I can step out and do the things that God has called me to do. For me, I'm not afraid to like get on stage. I was the Easter Bunny in the mall one year. Like, I'm not afraid of any of those things. What I'm most afraid of is that you'll know all the parts of me, all the icky parts. But God, and I love this quote by Brennan Manning, define yourself radically as one beloved by God. This is the true self. Every other identity is an illusion. Mm-hmm. And so when I start to get either like full of shame or even full of pride, I start to remember that, like, God calls me the beloved. God loves me. And, you know, I feel we need to shout that everywhere. Our teenagers need to hear it. The elderly need to hear it. We need to shout out people's worth. Mm. We have become a culture that has just, especially like on Twitter and the internet, we just immediately attack each other and eat each other alive. And as I mentioned before, you never know what somebody's going through. And instead, let's shout out each other's worth. Let's say you're the beloved. You are loved by God. I was at the airport yesterday, and we were standing in the security line, and I was looking around, and everyone's on their phone. Everyone is on their phone. I'm not sure a single person like looked up and noticed anyone in front. And this woman behind me started screaming at her, I think it was like a 7-year-old son. And she was yelling at him in a very inappropriate way. And I immediately, like every part of my body started to be kind of angry.
Like flashbacks from your past?
Exactly. Hmm. And I'm like, oh, here we go. And I immediately, I'm like, okay, if I can just get through security. And that's what I'm talking about of this, like, this isn't about me. This is about this woman right here who God calls her his beloved. And it was just really shocking to me. Nobody did anything. And at first I wanted to turn around and say, like, knock that off. That is, you are harming your child. That's what I wanted to say. But then I just started praying and I went through security and then I waited and I'm like, God, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? And I watched and nobody did anything. She started sobbing. And everyone could hear her sobbing. And I just was looking around like, why isn't anyone like helping her? So I walked up to her and I said, I didn't say, can I help you? You know, I didn't put her down or anything. I just said, how can I help you? And she looked at me and she just started sobbing. And we just stood there and we just hugged, you know, and she just said, I have had the hardest day and my kids are driving me crazy. And I'm just like, okay, you're going to be all right. Like, let me help you get your shoes. Let me help you get your stuff off the thing. And then we walked down the hallway. Now, this isn't about me. This is about our culture. And this is about us, mm-hmm. all of us, that we need to put our phones down and we need to look at people in front of us and ask this question, like, you don't know what she's going through. And how about you just love on her? Is that so hard to just put that phone down and love on her? And I'll tell you what, it was hard for me. I was running late for my plane. I didn't want to do that. I did not want to do that. But it touched me, and hopefully it touched her. And I said to her, you know, like, I'm going to pray for you. I'm here to help if you need anything.
It takes bravery to move towards somebody.
Yes.
Who's not doing well.
Right.
And I get the point of a mom yelling at a kid. My first reaction is want to say, hey, ma'am, really?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Really? But you gave her two important gifts. One is the gift of your presence, just going up and entering her space and then just serving her, just saying,
yeah, how can I help you?
And I think sometimes, Bob, our courage factor needs to be poked on a little bit, which Lee does in her book, just to get us to step out and engage other people who are hurting, who are broken, who have messed up and who need a friend.
Well, and one of the ways, Lee, that you do that in the book, Brave is the New Beautiful, is you draw pictures for us. You paint portraits of women who you've met, women whose stories you know, who have modeled bravery.
Yeah.
Like the story of Amy, who was sexually abused by a gymnastics coach.
Yes.
I mean, we've read a lot about this in the papers, right?
Right. And Amy, you know, this happened years ago. She's a grown adult now. But Amy at first didn't want to come out and say that this had happened because the culture she was in was starting to pick sides. And she was a young 12-year-old little girl, and she didn't want to come out and say this happened. But then eventually she did report what happened.
Right.
And she ended up having to be on stand for 5 hours.
As a 12-year-old?
As a 12-year-old. Wow. For 5 hours, you know, staring him in the eyes. That is unbelievable bravery. And when I interviewed this girl, Amy, she's now in her 20s. She was like, yeah, it was really hard, but, you know, it's what I did. It's what I needed to do. And that changed the trajectory of her life. So sometimes acting out in those scary things can completely change the trajectory of our lives. And what it did for her is she was no longer holding the trauma in her body. You know, she was using her voice to speak what it was true.
We've read these stories, as I said, of women on the Michigan State gymnastics team and women who were abused beyond that scope. Many of these women were silent about their abuse for decades.
Right.
Why would so many not say, hang on, this is wrong, this happened to me? Why the silence?
That's a great question and one of my favorite questions because, as I mentioned, the book was called Me Too and now it's not, but I often get interviews to talk about this Me Too movement and especially the Me Too movement in the church. It's happening. We cannot deny that it is now affecting the American church. The reason why people stay silent is you have to understand what happens to the body when it is traumatized. Not only when it's traumatized, but the risk of speaking up. So you think about this little girl. I mean, mm-hmm. when you're a teenager,
right.
your social life is it. So she would lose that. You think about women, you know, women who have jobs who are being sexually harassed at work. Are they going to speak up? Or are they going to lose their job? You know, are they going to risk that? People stay silent because they're afraid. And people also stay silent because people say they don't believe them. A national broadcaster was just accused of sexual harassment. And a group of seven women came out. And for the woman who accused him, they came out and said she was not telling the truth. So why would anyone go then and tell if you're going to be not only eaten alive by the media, but you're going to be eaten alive by other women, which is hard enough as it is. But the reality is two things. One, when you have trauma in your body, you're re-traumatized every time this thing is brought up. And I know many women who have been sexually assaulted, and every time they read a story about Me Too or every time they hear a story, they're reliving some of it in their body. So if anyone is listening and that is you, I encourage you to be able to get the help you need so that the trauma doesn't have to live in your body, but also that you have to tell someone and that telling someone your story, telling somebody what happened does change the course of your life because you now have a voice. You now are being seen. And you know, that woman who I saw at the airport, it reminded me a lot of myself and a lot of what I see happening with women. All we really want, and this is men too, we just want to be seen. We want somebody to see us. Uh-huh. Not to be seen like I wanted to be seen
right.
as famous and this great
acknowledged.
Author. Yeah. Like, I see you. I put my phone down. I look you in the eyes. I want to hear your story. I see you. That's what Jesus did, right? He saw people. He took time with them and saw them. Then the next step is then asking people, help me understand. Like, help me understand your story. And instead of jumping to this, I don't agree, or this is wrong, or this isn't biblical, how about just help me understand, which is a very gentle and loving way to help somebody feel seen.
The Bible is filled with all kinds of stories about relationships.
Yes.
And where you have relationships, you're ultimately going to have conflict. And where there's conflict, there has to be some kind of resolution of asking for forgiveness and granting forgiveness. You
right.
tell a story in your book about an older woman,
yes.
79 years old,
yes.
about how she forgave someone.
Yes, Carolyn, amazing woman. And I had all these judgments about her when I met her, which was funny. You know, here I am trying to talk about loving people, and I'm sitting next to her at this conference, and I'm like, oh, she's probably this and that and this and that. And as I got to know her, she shared her story with me, and I was just blown away. She had worked at a place for people with AIDS, and she had to change their diapers and had to help them in their daily living. And she had judgments about these people and had all these thoughts and opinions, and she wanted to come in there and save them. And she quickly realized that she could learn a lot from them. And she learned a lot about grace and loving people and just holding their hand. And she taught me a lot in telling me those stories of what it was like for her. And she was a judge. She was a district or federal judge. Mm-hmm. She came in there wanting to be Jesus for these people, which is, there's nothing wrong with that. But what she found was it was through relationship and through loving these people that she saw Jesus. And it was pretty profound to hear her story.
You tell a story as well about a young woman who went back to Vietnam.
Yes.
To find her home, right?
Yes. And her story, if I could write book about her whole story, I would. As I was interviewing her, her story is fascinating. She didn't even know that her family was still alive in Vietnam. She was adopted into the United States at a very young age. And they had been on TV shows out in Vietnam, kind of like Find Your Relative, all this stuff. And anyway, they ended up finding her. But the piece about her story, what, that wasn't the story. And the story was, is that she grew up in a white, Caucasian, Norwegian family, and she thought she was white and Caucasian for most of her life. And so it's so funny how you think a story is the story. And then as I got to know her, I'm like, wait, you saw pictures, right? You saw pictures of your family and realized that you were Asian. And she's like, yeah, I saw pictures, but I thought I was Caucasian and white. And so her crisis of faith was when she finally realized in high school, I'm not this, I'm something else. And how do I become this? And I think it's very similar to what I was talking about of my own life. Am I going to be the person that the world wants me to be? Or am I going to step into the person that God created me to be? There's certain things I would love to be. I'd love to be really good at math. I'd love to be a really good theologian. I'd love to, like, be really quiet, right? But I'm not any of those things. So to sit there and try and be something that I'm not, why can't I need to let other people be that? Which brings me to another point. As women, we think there's not enough room for us, especially even women authors and speakers. Oh, there's not enough room for me. Somebody else is already doing that, or somebody else is already like that, or somebody else has already achieved that. Then we back off. Oh, I shouldn't do that. There's people already doing that. What we don't realize is that God created every single one of us unique. So what I bring to the table, like there's a lot of books about bravery, right? So I'm not unique in that, but how God created me, my take on it, which is unique. There is room for all of us. And I have found, and part of my learning through all of this is when I start to realize there's room for her and there's room for me, it takes out jealousy. Mm. Because when I believe that there's room for us and we don't live in this scarcity mentality, then I can cheer her on. So I'm no longer jealous. I'm no longer envying her. I'm no longer looking at Instagram and going, oh, I wish I had what she had. I'm saying, here's my life and that's hers. And then I make it for myself, anytime I have a cling or a little bit of jealousy, I then cheer her on. I say, you go, girl. What you're doing is amazing. And then it takes the jealousy away. God has created all of us so that there is room for all of us and a path for every one of us. And mine is not the same as hers.
Lee, you shared a little bit with us about your eating disorder. Mm-hmm. You wrote a book, a memoir about your eating disorder. You also, at one point in your life, you were ready to end it?
Yes, actually, I did. I attempted suicide, which is not always a subject that everyone wants to talk about.
No, I just want to affirm you. Suicide is far more common than the Christian community, and as far as that goes, the nation is aware of. And I think if people don't tell their stories, they don't give people the freedom to come out of the darkness of depression.
Right.
And admit what they're being tempted to do. So I'm glad you did tell your story.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very lucky to be alive. I tried to take my own life. I was in a deep depression.
You were not married at the time?
Nope.
Were you dating Chris?
I was dating Chris, yes.
Did he know?
He knew I was in a deep depression. He did not know that I was going to take my life. I was pretty serious about it. So many people had told me, if you would just pray, you'd be healed. And yet I still felt miserable. I still had a real deep clinical depression, and my eating disorder, most of it was because of the depression of just, I didn't want to eat, I didn't want to take care of myself. And so I felt great shame and embarrassment that I couldn't get out of it. And then I was like, well, God must not love me because I'm not healed. So then why should I live? Which is totally wrong theology, and it, you know, it was totally Satan just really messing with my brain. So I took multiple pills, was pretty adamant, packed things in boxes, did all the usual things that people do when they're going to end their lives. And my husband, Chris, who I was dating at the time, woke up in the middle of the night and had this feeling that something was wrong, which is crazy. I believe it's divine intervention. And he woke up in the middle of the night, came to the house I was at. I was a nanny, and he banged on the door, you know, banging on the door.
So he drove somewhere.
Yep. I was about like 4 a.m, banging on the door. The mom came down, and she's like, "What are you doing?" And he said, "There's something wrong with Lee. I know there's something wrong with Lee." I gave him no indication whatsoever. And they ran up and they found me lying in a pool of my own vomit. And I proceeded to be in the ICU for 3 days. And basically all the doctors were like, "It's unbelievable that he found you when he did, or you would have been dead. And the chances of you having children, the chances of you, you know, really recovering fully from this are very slim." Haha, but not with a God so big as ours, right? Mm-hmm. And I say that because I have 3 beautiful kids. I do feel like I'm fully recovered from eating disorder. Depression still rears its ugly head every so often. So the point of that is I really, at that point in time, I really had this moment with God in the ICU where he reminded me of the man by the pool in John 5. And the man by the pool, you know, he's laying there 38 years and he's saying, "Oh God, you know, nobody will help me. Nobody will help me. All these people get in the pool, but nobody will help me get in the pool." And God's like, "Pick up your mat and walk." And so at this point in my life, God was saying, not, "I'm not going to heal you," but, "Lee, I don't force you to do things. And Lee, you have to do your part. You have to pick up your mat and walk." And it was at that point in my life that I started doing the things that I needed to do for recovery. And then God met me there, because God's not going to force himself upon us. The whole time now I look back, God's saying, "I love you. I don't want you living like this, but you won't come to me. And I'm just waiting, for you, Lee, to come to me." And he said, "Pick up your mat and walk." And I started walking. And I'm not walking back to that pool for sure.
Yeah, I'm glad you let our listeners in on that story, because you mentioned this earlier. You kept talking about people who weren't convinced their life matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
your life does matter. And as you were telling your story, I couldn't help but think, after you started talking about the person who was healed by the pool, mm-hmm. of Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10. And it says, right after it says, we have been saved by grace mm-hmm. through faith.
Yes.
And that we can't boast about it. So it's God's love that changes our lives and makes us a new person. It says in verse 10, "For we, you, Lee, are his workmanship." And the concept of workmanship means God's work of art.
That's so beautiful.
And as you were sharing that story, I was thinking, God made a work of art that he was not done displaying
right.
in his creation.
Mm-hmm.
And he loved you so much, he woke your future husband up.
Yeah.
And he had to forego the humiliation and the shame of going and knocking at somebody's door at 4 a.m.
Right.
to rescue mm-hmm. the work of art. What's the work of art supposed to do? Well, it goes on and says this, "Created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them." He has hardwired you with a spiritual DNA to use you for this generation. And he loved you so much that he wouldn't let you perish.
Yeah.
Not only spiritually by dying for you, but also physically perish and shorten your life when he still has something for you to do. Mm-hmm. And I've got a book for you.
Well, great.
Okay. Let me reach over here and get it.
Well, and while you're doing that, I would say that I believe he has that for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't think just being a speaker and a writer is it. You know, God has a plan for everyone, and he'll go to the ends of the earth for all of us.
Ephesians 2 is a verse for everybody.
Yes. Yeah.
Everyone is his workmanship. Everyone is created in Christ
yes.
Jesus for good works, which he prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. That's not just a select group.
Exactly. And I don't want anyone to hear that and think, "Oh, God saved me." He's going to save everyone to do what he has planned for their lives.
Yeah.
And I really believe that.
So you don't know this, but I wrote a book called what?
Choosing a Life That Matters.
So I want to give this to you because your life does matter.
Thank you.
And he does have a plan for you. And I want to thank you for writing this book.
Thanks.
And calling women especially to bravery.
Mm-hmm.
And it really is a new beauty.
Yes.
It really is. Thanks for being on the broadcast.
Thank you for having me.
We have got copies of the book, Brave is the New Beautiful, in our Family Life Today Resource Center. You can order it from us when you go online at familylifetoday.com, or you can call to order at 1-800-FL-TODAY. Again, the title of Lee's book, Brave is the New Beautiful. Order online at familylifetoday.com or call 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today to request the book. You know, as we've talked about depression and eating disorders and about discouragement and the very real issues that we face in life, I'm just reminded of the fact that our prayer, our desire every day here on Family Life Today is to provide listeners with practical biblical help and hope for the issues that we face in our marriages, in our families, in our lives. We want to effectively develop godly marriages and families. This radio program is one of the ways that Family Life is seeking to build stronger, healthier families. And you join with us in that mission every time you support Family Life Today. In fact, those of you who have supported this ministry in the past, you're the ones who made today's program possible for hundreds of thousands of people all around the world who are listening on radio, online, on our mobile app. And of course, now we got people who are just telling Alexa to play Family Life Today. You can train your Alexa device, so all you have to do is ask for the program each day. You make that possible for others when you donate to support this ministry, and we're grateful for your partnership with us in the gospel. If it's been a while since you've made a donation, or if you've been listening for a long time and you've never made a donation, we'd love to have you go online to donate today. You can do it easily at familylifetoday.com, or you can call 1-800-FL-TODAY to donate. We've got our new 2019 Family Life calendar that's all about building togetherness in your family. It's got togetherness tips each month. There's a Bible verse your family can memorize each month. It's our thank you gift to you when you donate today. Again, online at familylifetoday.com or by calling 1-800-FL-TODAY. And let me just say thanks in advance for your partnership with us. We appreciate your support. And we hope you have a great weekend. Hope you and your family are able to worship together in church this weekend. And I hope you can join us back on Monday. Jaquel Crowe's going to be here. She's a young woman who lives in Canada who has begun to understand how the gospel and understanding the gospel, believing the gospel, really does change everything in your life, whether you're young or old. She'll talk more about that on Monday. I hope you can be with us for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We will see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a crew ministry. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.